Ways and Means Committee, Subcommittee on General Government, and I'm going to open a public hearing on House or Senate Bill 474. And Ms. McCune, would you tell us what 474 is about and what I need to know?
Okay. Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 474 did have one previous public hearing. It is a bill that changes the budgeting process to include proposed spending targets, both for the governor's recommended as well as the legislative process, and requires certain specific items to be included in budget presentations.
Okay. We've got Senator Morris here, who has had some background with these bills. Senator, would you please tell us, give us a little information on what you want us to know and hide from us what you don't want?
Well, Mr. Chair, for the record, Frank Morris, represent District 8, Albany and Corvallis areas. There's nothing that I would want to keep from disclosure, certainly with respect to this bill. If I was to summarize it, and since we have had a public hearing where we went through it in a fair amount of detail, if I was to summarize this bill, what I believe it does is it creates a more disciplined, rational process that is more inclusive of the legislature's representation on ways and means and on the subcommittees in crafting the budget. By creating a budget resolution document, assigning responsibilities to the subcommittees in ways that have not heretofore been done, all in the context of putting boundaries on the direction that we're going with a guidance document that would be the budget resolution document. So the entire assembly knows where we're going. As I stated in the earlier public hearing on this issue, we need to be thinking in terms of how can we move our assembly into a 120-day time period, because that's very likely where we will be going. And the budget process, as we have known it, particularly in the last two sessions, this session is much different. It's moved more quickly, but still, we've not moved it in a 120-day time period. And that's likely where I believe that we will go if we do refer something to the voters with respect to annual sessions.
Okay. Questions for Senator Morris on Senate Bill 474. Senator Whitsitt.
Thank you, Chair Jensen. Senator Morris, is there any articulated opposition to this bill?
I've not heard opposition from members of Ways and Means with respect to this bill, and I've not heard opposition from other members in terms of where we're wanting to take this.
Thank you.
Concerns about whether it should be by statute, that is an issue, whether it should be done by rule, or whether it should just be done by fiat by the co-chairs, which certainly they would have the ability to do this. My response to the issue with respect to whether it should be done by rule, if it's the will of this committee and the body to go in this direction, is that it's very difficult for one chamber to bind the other chamber, and to have one consistent document that carries from one session to the next, irrespective of the personalities as we all change over time, I believe is the right way to go. Statutes are subject to change. Notwithstanding, we can change if things are not working the way that you anticipate. So I believe that is the only comment that I've heard with respect to this bill, Senator.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Or?
Mr. Chair, I guess I do have one.
Representative Beyer.
I guess I just haven't. I vaguely remember the earlier conversation, and I haven't really read it since then, but by adopting this, we're putting it in the statutes? Is that or?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beyer, yes, this would be a statutory document that would guide us and the governor, by the way. There are certain things that we've cleaned up in terms of what the governor does in preparing his budget for our consideration. And some of those are kind of technical. Some of them are fairly significant.
Mr. Chair. Representative Crummell.
Thank you. Senator, thanks for bringing this forward. It looks vaguely familiar from the, or something like it, from the 99 and 01 session. But my question is, on page 3 of the bill, at lines 12 through 14, it states that that the spending agreement applies is less than the amount, or if the amount of available funds, basically, is less than the spending agreement is based on, that the Legislative Assembly shall raise a sufficient amount of funds. I mean, that's like we're telling ourselves that we have to increase revenues there. But in the next statement down under number 3, it says, notwithstanding subsection 2, if a recession occurs, the agreement may be modified. Is that a way for us to be able to say, look, we don't think it's fair to raise more revenues or tax people higher when, you know, the reason why we don't have more revenues coming in is because people aren't working. And so that sort of gives us the license then to modify that spending agreement without creating any kind of a problem for ourselves and being out of sync with the statute.
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, I believe that you're correct in your assessment. The intent was that we would be responsive, obviously, as we are, have to be, to changing conditions.
Okay. Thank you.
Other? Can you?
Mr. Chair, may I ask one more question?
But of course. We're waiting for a senator right now.
So. Okay. So we might as well ask questions.
Yeah.
Okay. Senator, on page 2 of the bill, at lines 37 through 40, it says that, you know, if the spending agreement, after it's been reached, if, you know, the joint ways and means process ceases to function, so the two committees that the spending agreement is void, and that the Legislative Assembly is not bound by the terms of the agreement. Is there a particular reason why that was put in there?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell. That the history of the legislature has been rather tumultuous over time. I think maybe would be to state that maybe thoughtfully. And in the event that you do have significant disagreements and you have a split, which has happened the last two sessions, and it certainly happened prior to that, so it's nothing new, that if you do have a split in the budgeting process between the two chambers, it would be very difficult to have this document be the guiding document in that event.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, Mr. Chair, I think I'm done. Thank you.
Well, while we're still waiting for the senator, we'll close the public hearing on 474. What? Okay. And
up right here.
And we're here, and we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 474. And do I have any proposals to get a motion?
Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill 474 to the Full Ways and Means with a two-pass recommendation.
Senator Winchett moves Senate Bill 474 to the Joint Ways and Means Committee with a two-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
I would just want to put on the record, Mr. Chair, I was out of the room. I am well-versed on this particular piece of legislation. I've discussed it with colleagues, including Senator Morris, and I will enthusiastically cast an aye vote. So I didn't want to appear uninformed about a bill I'm about to vote on.
Okay. Mr. Chair? I would just state that I have been a proponent of making some changes to our budgeting process since I've been in the building, and this is to me a very reasonable approach, and I do support the notion that we should do this. I'm assuming that this came to Ways and Means because of the policy around budgeting, and that's why it's here, because there doesn't seem to be a real heavy duty fiscal on it, and so at this point, am I correct?
I think it's a Ways and Means type bill.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Byer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I still have a very good memory of last session, and not really knowing that it helped us particularly to do this, to have that agreement ahead of time. It didn't seem to really smooth the way for much of anything. So I'll go ahead and vote for it here, but I'm still considering it and reserve the right to change my vote.
Thank you, Representative. Any other discussion? Objections? Hearing none, so ordered, noting Representative Galizio and Senator Bates are excused.
And we'll close the work session then on Senate Bill 474 and open a public hearing on, Senate Bill 1039. And staff will give us a quick introduction there, and Senator Morris is here and will continue that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 1039 establishes the Committee on Performance Excellence and specifies who is on the committee, as well as what the committee will be investigating, working on, and what kind of reports that committee will make as well. And again, this is the second hearing on this bill.
Okay. Senator Morris, did you have some comments for us on this bill?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, colleagues. When we had the public hearing before, I read the whereases, and I'd like to read those again because I think it sets the stage for where I believe that we can go with this bill. Whereas the state cannot legislate excellence but can expect it, support it, and acknowledge it when it occurs, we in the legislative process and the Ways and Means process, we expect excellence. We're not sometimes too prone to acknowledge it and reward it, but we do expect it. Whereas excellence is a passion, and when it exists, the Legislative Assembly should support it fully. And whereas the purpose of this legislation is to create a process that will oversee the journey to excellence and will encourage the most vital aspects of Oregon State government to be managed at a world-class level. That sets the bar pretty high. But I think we need to set the bar high. And what this bill does, I believe, is creates a more collaborative process between the legislative branch and the executive branch to focus on the critical functions of government and how we can collectively and bring in the outside world, the third parties that have particular expertise, how we can, in fact, bring government up to a higher standard and aspire to world-class performance. And that's really the objective of this bill, Mr. Chair, colleagues.
Questions? Senator Johnson has a question, I know.
No, she doesn't. She has a motion.
Oh.
She's crouched here like a panther with a motion.
I think I've only got a public hearing. Did I open the work session? I got to have a question before I can open a work session. Thank you.
Senator, what obstacles or barriers exist in the status quo that prevent us from achieving excellence and you have 30 seconds.
Oh, my goodness. What did I do in your committee to deserve that
question? No, I mean, seriously, I'm just looking at this, I could see somebody looking at this and going, I mean, you another committee. You know, why don't you just achieve excellence? What are we doing?
Thank you. I think that's an excellent question. I believe what this bill does, it sets in process or undertakes a formal process to look critically at specific functions. And you'll notice in the language of the bill, it's not a broad-based shotgun approach, but it's the legislative branch bringing forward, working with the legislature and outside members to focus on specific either departments, agencies, functions of government that you can bring in the resources to bear to actually make substantive improvements. And then when you do, put it on the mountaintop and let the world know, which is a requirement in this bill by way of press releases and public acknowledgement, of when we do it well. Unfortunately, when government does perform well, the public never perceives that. And this is an opportunity and a platform to actually communicate that, yeah, we have made substantive changes, reforms, and we're operating with greater efficiency at less cost. And I believe that's a very important thing that we don't do now very well.
Senator Roxanne Byer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Kind of a follow-up on that. By sending out a press announcement doesn't necessarily do that much unless you can get press to actually follow up on that announcement to let the public know. So we're somewhat limited in what we can do. And I know that we have a lot of agencies now that are doing that. But it certainly is a lot more fun to get a press announcement saying we've made a mistake and beat up on us on that one. So
you're absolutely correct. Bad news sells better than good news.
Are you suggesting we should have a bill recommending the opposite type of committee?
Friendly amendment.
Yeah. Friendly amendment to the... okay. Any other questions? Representative Cromwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I would make it more as a statement as opposed to a question. But in Section 2, it's identifying A through G under subsection 2A of customer and market focus, and I think that is really huge, because one of the things I think when people walk into a government office, and they're treated as though they are an interruption to the person that's manning or womaning the staffing, I guess is the correct word to use, the desk, they don't get a real good feeling for going in. And I think customer service is something that we always need to focus on and realize that when the public walks in, they are our customer. The other thing that I would point out is with regards to the strategic planning, and it appears as though there's a couple of areas a little bit further down on that same page, on page 2, relative to this. And I think, again, this is something that is very big, because when and I'll point directly at ODOT and our transportation systems. We have not done, we've maybe done a terrific job of planning them, but we have done a really crappy job of implementing them. And if this kind of strategic planning and looking ahead can help us with implementation, then I am all for it. So it really wasn't a question, Mr. Chair.
I figured out. We will then close our public hearing on Senate Bill 1039 and open the work session on Senate Bill 1039.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Johnson.
I would move Senate Bill 1039 to the full committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Johnson moves Senate Bill 1039 to the full committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Representative Cromwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question did just pop into my brain. I know it's under the wrong heading here with the work session versus the public hearing. However,
okay.
A question that popped into my brain is with regards to, because up to this point, it's been the Joint Legislative Audits Committee that has really kind of been working sort of ad hoc to a certain degree, but with some direction from legislation that we've passed over the last couple of sessions in particular that have been looking at, for example, the performance measures and that sort of thing. Is that, and Senator Morris, is it sort of the intention here that that particular function would be lifted from the Joint Legislative Audits Committee and really so that it becomes a real focus as of this committee as opposed to kind of a sidebar of the Joint Legislative Audits process?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Cromwell, I would judge that that the Legislative Audits Committee will be an integral part of looking at and recommending those areas that need specific attention. What this bill does is it focuses more on the process improvement and actually helping and initiating and working with to have process improvement, which my understanding, I've never served on the Legislative Audits Committee, but I'm not sure how engaged that committee has been in actually thinking how do you improve the process and actually rolling up the sleeves and making improvements happen. More of an audit function as opposed to an implementation function.
Well, I can tell you, I was a House co-chair of Joint Legislative Audits last interim, and I can tell you that from our perspective, and I hope that, and I don't intend to try to speak for Senator Schrader, but I think one of the things that we kind of shared as a maybe a little bit of a frustration was that there were a lot of audit functions sort of coming at us, one of which was the performance measures, and really trying to be able to get our hands around the performance measures so that they were, number one, meaningful, something that the agencies could attain, and really focusing on outcomes as opposed to outputs. And I think we got the committee moving in that direction, and we got the agencies kind of moving in that direction. So I see this as a real natural progression to that. But I would agree that the audit, you know, when in the audit process, there's something that's identified that needs improvement, and in handing it off or being able to work with this committee in a real meaningful way to kind of bring it together, identify what the problem is, and then figure out, okay, now how do we look at that and fix it? I think would be very welcome. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Other comments?
Just to share, Mr. Chair, I think that, you know, in my view of government, we have a lot of process, and some of that process is unnecessary. I think we ought to I would hope that this committee would be looking at work time versus elapsed time. Often where it takes 20 or 30 minutes to fill out a form or to write a letter, whatever, it takes 30 days to get there. Usually that's if there's a 28-day limit, or it takes 28 days if there's a 30-day limit, that sort of thing. I think we need to do a lot of cost evaluation. What's productivity usually is, in my view, a combination of incentives and attitude, and I think that this would all some incentives and some competition for excellence could not hurt in this government.
Again, other comments?
I wondered, Senator, if I could ask you a question, Senator Morris. How come you didn't put any lobbyists on this committee?
Well, it never occurred to me.
I'm in some seriousness with this, you know, with this question. You've got a group of people who obviously have been around legislatures or decision-making bodies, many of them for a long time, and have an awful lot of things that they
can bring to us, even though they are in their real life advocating for whoever their clients may be. But I'm sure that that particular group of people would give us something of benefit in a commission or committee of this type.
Mr. Chair,
so far none of the lobbyists in the room have fainted, or fallen over or anything. Although I did catch a gulp or two.
your question never was posed in any of the work groups that we've had informally in crafting this, in terms of that body being represented here.
Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chair, I guess my response, were I the author of this bill, would have been that I think a neutral forum, or the perception of a neutral forum, is going to be essential to move the substance of this discussion forward. And while I greatly respect the historical perspective and the in-depth knowledge that most people that serve in the lobby possess, my concern would be that if there was the potential or the appearance or the perception of advantage to a certain segment of Oregonians, that it would skew this discussion to a point where it couldn't move forward. The appointment to the process to this is going to be essential. Getting right-thinking Oregonians, having them occupy seats with Oregon as their outcome, not a preconceived outcome, be it management, be it labor, be it environmental, be it use of natural resources. I mean, finding the Oregonians that will come forward and approach this in a neutral forum is going to be essential to its success, in my opinion.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Johnson, if I may, there is one part of the bill that I overlooked mentioning, and it's a very important part, and that is frontline labor will be a part of this process. And that's absolutely critical in any organization. And I speak from experience in my own business career, is that when you don't engage the front line in looking at processes and thinking strategically about where you're going, you just don't have the best outcomes. And so that is a part of this bill. And then when we have, you'll notice in the bill that when there is a specific project that's focused on, then you'll have members, ex officio members, that will come on from that department or agency to be a part of it. And I would expect that within that context, that the governor would select frontline leaders as well.
Mr. Chair, if I may respond.
Please.
Thank you for that much more nuanced response, and perhaps I used the wrong example. I agree with your reasoning completely. What I didn't want was the process of staking out seats that represented perspectives. And I don't care whose perspectives they are, but I deeply appreciate your recognition that you can think up all the great ideas in the back room, but if you don't have your frontline employees engaged completely, you won't succeed.
Yes.
I certainly don't have a quarrel with that, but as I heard you defining frontline employee, it sounded to me like you were talking more of the management line personnel. Is that incorrect?
That, I think if that was the impression I left, that was not the impression I would like to leave. Frontline leadership in the private sector are those people truly on the front line, the labor that actually does the work, not management.
Okay. I'm reading the line where. I really see this. I see that we have four employees of the executive department,
including managers and frontline leaders, I guess. Okay. And then we've got three public members who have demonstrated experience in continuous improvement in business. And I'm not sure that I understand how that maybe gets us to exactly what I then heard you saying. But we won't ride this. In all due respect to my distinguished colleague, Senator from the Lower Columbia River, I suspect there's already enough bias in here if the public wants to look at it with a jaundiced eye. When we have four members of the executive department and four members of the legislative department or departments, two by the Senate and two by the House, I think, it's not a fox in the hen house, it's the chicken in the hen house here, kind of thing with that. So as long as it's the hen house and lobbyists are part of the, an integral part, actually, of the system. And I'm not going to. I'm just going to hold that out there, some possible thought for future reference. It's not my intention to offer up any amendments or anything of that nature here today. But I hate to pass up a valuable resource in the process that you're talking about. And I, while I vehemently disagree on a number of occasions with some of those folks who are in that category, and on rare occasions I even agree with them, I have great respect for their ability to analyze how good a job we're doing here in the legislature. And excellence, once you achieve it, I think will stand out for itself. But with that, let me, before I get in too deep of water or dig the hole too deep with this shovel I've got, close that discussion and wait for the senator to come back and see that if we have any objections to the amendment, the motion that has been made.
Mr. Chair, I have a comment. Just looking through this, just dawned on me to see whether or not this is a committee that is going to end at any point or just ongoing, and it appears that there is no end on this. There's no sunset, or it's just ongoing, I assume. And now we've got a little concerned about starting up committees, and not, I guess they have to come and report back, but so I just want that on the record.
Okay. Their objections, then. Seeing none, so ordered, noting that Senator Bates is excused, and I need two Senate carriers, or one carrier for two bills. Senator Whitsitt has volunteered to be one carrier for two bills in the full Ways and Means and on the Senate floor. And it's my assumption that probably Representative Crummell would like to carry these bills on the House floor.
Be happy to, Mr. Chair.
Okay. With that, thank you, Teresa. We will close the work session on Senate Bill 1039, open a public hearing on House Bill 13.
2530. And Mr.
Wilder. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2530 is came from the House Revenue Committee. It creates a commission on comprehensive revenue restructuring of 30 members and also a 7-member of council to advise it. It's to be staffed, both the council and the commissioner to be staffed by the Legislative Revenue Office. The bill was referred down here for because of the fiscal. You have a copy of the staff measure summary, the fiscal impact. We have amendment drafted, but we don't have co-chair approval yet. So at this point, we have to go ahead for the public hearing.
Okay, and Senator Marsh, would you like to explain a little bit about both what the bills were about and maybe a little briefly the history on them?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, colleagues.
Or on this one.
As you know, House Bill 2530 started out as a rather comprehensive tax reform document that reduced the capital gains tax, reduced the personal income tax. It increased the earned income tax credit. It provided low-income rent relief and a homestead exemption to low-income elderly to the tune of $1 billion. It implemented a 5% consumption tax with a 1.5% collection fee, 1.5% of revenues collected that would go to businesses that collected revenue. And it had in its projections for every tax bracket, it had a reduction in taxes, in tax burden. So it had a net reduction in taxes. It also had an increase in revenue to the tune of about $1 billion per biennium. And that ranged somewhere between $800 to $1 billion, depending on when the OTIM model was run, Oregon Tax Incidence Model. We didn't have the essentially the right chemistry, I guess you might say, or the right timing. And projects of this complexity have to be in the right context at the right time to move forward. And it was pretty much the consensus in this assembly that this was not the right time to move forward in comprehensive systemic tax reform. What this bill does, it takes this, it does not let this interest terminate at this session. It allows it to go forward in what, by the intent of these amendments, in a very broad-based, comprehensive way, engaging not just members of the assembly, but key stakeholders outside of this building in a way that would allow us to look at it thoughtfully, inclusive of not just the state's circumstance, but the state government circumstance, but local government circumstance as well, particularly as it relates to the rural counties. And looking at stability of revenue, adequacy of revenue, and tax reform that actually has specific objectives that would strengthen the economy, increase employment, increase incentives for capital formation and investment in the state, that would lessen the tax burden for Oregonians and increase the adequacy, particularly as it relates to the budget gap that we have in our state as a result of the initiative process over the last 16, 17 years. So what this bill does, it allows us to carry this forward in a way that in recent history has not been quite as broad-based. After the 03 session, there was a very formal process for tax reform that was put into play, but it was driven mostly by the membership. What I would offer is, as we have tackled this issue in the interim, and a number of us have had considerable passion and interest with respect to this whole issue of adequacy and stability of revenue and how we can do it better, it's very, very clear that the public does not hold us, and I say this regretfully, does not hold us in high regard with respect to trust. And it's disappointing. The public generally does not trust the legislature. And what this, I believe this bill will do, the amendments to this bill, will allow us to reach beyond just a legislatively driven process to engage members, stakeholders, critical part of our state community in a way that we can look at tax reform. I can offer my personal observations. When we have a revenue system in this state that is the most volatile of any state in the nation, and what we have gone through in the 03 session, in the 05 session, the special sessions of 02 and the rebalancing of 03, and now we're in the period of bounty. But one of the greatest risks that we have in this assembly is that we accept the revenue forecasts as the gospel and that they are sustainable. And in fact, we know they are not, and they will not be, given the very nature of our revenue system. So how we manage that is a critical task that we have before us. Are there changes that can be made to our tax system that will, in fact, decrease the volatility, increase the stability, and increase revenues? And I say that guardedly, because some people look at that if we are raising taxes. With a consumption tax, you broaden the base and have the opportunity to have a net reduction in taxes for taxpayers. At the same time, you can increase revenues by going after those untaxed components of our society. So this amendment to this bill is an opportunity for us to collectively state to Oregon that we are not satisfied with status quo. We want to pursue it in the interim and bring back recommendations for the 09 session, Mr. Chair, colleagues. Thank you.
Thank you. There are questions for Senator Morris. Representative Whitson.
Thank you.
Senator Whitson, thank you.
Thank you, Chair Jensen. Late in the day. Senator Morris, we currently have a revenue stream of about $50 billion, which is about $54,000 per family of four, roughly like that. So I would hope that this committee would be looking more at stabilizing revenue, as you've pointed out, and I think that's very important. I would also hope that the committee would be looking at, task force would be looking at cost savings and processes, outcomes that at ways of cutting, I think, a way of cutting expenses. I think that, as you pointed out, the people are suspicious, and perhaps rightfully so. I mean, if you really ask most people on the street, where would we spend $54,000 on them and their family of four? They might have two questions. One, yes, where could you spend it? And two, where do you get it? So I don't see this, in my mind, this shouldn't be a primary means of raising more revenue. It should be a means of stabilizing that revenue and of identifying the best means and the most cost-effective means to spend it. I guess that wasn't a question.
Any other questions, Jeff?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Crummell.
Senator, do you see this task force as coming up with preconceived notions, or do you see this as sort of being the window is open, and let's look through it and see what we can find?
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, I think if we go into this process with preconceived ideas of outcomes, it would be a disservice. I think we need to keep all options open. With respect to property tax, one of the things that we heard, and as we touched base and we did surveys, focus groups, and statewide surveys, one thing we heard was that Oregonians are not, it's not part of our DNA collectively, opposed to a sales tax. We didn't sense that in the work that we did. What we did sense was that Oregonians would like to see a tax eliminated. if you're going to bring in a new tax, eliminate a tax. And that is, I think, bears fruit. There may be some things that we could do, particularly looking at a society where all of us, and the demographics of Oregon, we're aging, and you get people, more and more people living on fixed incomes, and you have more and more people having property taxes that are truly onerous to them. What can we do in that regard? And I think that's a very legitimate thing to talk about. We've not cast, in the history that I know of here, at least recent history, we've not cast models that have said, let's essentially eliminate a tax. But some of the preliminary work that just very cursorily that's been done, it looks like there may be some fertile ground there. So I think we've got to go into this with a wide vision and not a narrow vision.
Thank you.
If I could, and I don't mean to disrespect Frank, but could I ask Dr. Warner to come up? And, no, you can stay, please do. Paul, I know over the course of time that you've run, two, maybe three models on trying to figure out what's the best way to get to stability in our tax system. Can you, just on this system that was previously described, can you expound a little bit on, from your professional experience and background, the best way for us to, short of a Daddy Warbucks someplace, to have some tax stability?
Mr. Chair, Paul Warner, Legislative Revenue Office. Yes, we've been. This proposal really grows out of work that was done in the beginning of the summer of 2003 with Senator Moore, Senator Schrader, yourself, Mr. Chair, and some others. And you know, we've discussed this and analyzed this, and essentially our modeling shows a couple of things. One is it's very clear that the income tax is a highly elastic tax that generates significant revenue over time. And fortunately, we're in one of those periods now where we're on the positive side of things, and you're seeing that with higher revenue forecasts. So that does give you some more flexibility. It is a relatively more progressive tax in the sense that it can be distributed actually more flexibly than other taxes. However, it is an unstable tax, and our time series analysis has shown that as well as our history. And the other thing that our models show us, which we think is fairly significant, is that if you are operating, as we are, in an open economy where factors of production can freely flow between borders, labor and capital, our long-term models tell us the way you grow is you have a higher after-tax rate of return on either labor or capital. And an income tax has a more distorting effect on those location decisions than does a consumption tax. So a consumption tax, if we run a consumption tax and an income tax with equal amounts, we tend to get a positive employment and income effect. So the message there is that consumption taxes tend to be less, and not that they're not distorting at all taxes do have a distorting effect, and not that they don't have some effect on business, because roughly 25% of the current retail sales tax is paid by business. But that's the consensus of our models and our analysis, is you do have a more dampening effect on employment and growth through an income tax than you do through a consumption tax. And that, I think, is one of the things that the senators have worked with and over time that we've seen. Now, we haven't seen a lot of these kinds of major structural changes in history. I mean, tax systems are very difficult to change, and one of the things our models don't help us with very much is kind of a transition period, because no matter what your revenue system is, and you can argue that there are a lot of flaws in any revenue system, decisions have been made based on that revenue system, and when you change it, it is going to create some transition problems. For example, we would expect a proposal like this, we would see some shrinkage of our retail sector, particularly in the border areas, and that just stands to reason. What our models tell us is you'll have other sectors of the economy that will respond positively, and there will be a net income, net job and income increase, but there will be a transition. So that's the kind of analysis we can do, and we feel like we're fortunate that we have, through a legislative appropriation going back to 99, we have, we think, one of the best tools in the country for analyzing long-term impacts of tax changes in a state economy, our OTIM model that Senator Morse alluded to. And I think that does give us some insights to look at things and would be helpful, not only in terms of the economic effects, but also the distribution effects, to showing how different taxpayer groups would be affected. And we would obviously use that extensively in this type of a task force setting.
Is there any other questions or discussion? Dallas, maybe you can tell us what the amendment is.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we have an amendment simply to put money into the Legislative Revenue Office for purposes of staffing the task force and the council. There's significant cost, not only the numbers, but the number of meetings. It's a fairly significant undertaking with 37 different individuals to be staffed, so they'd ask for one part half-time person to support them, and then there's services and supplies aggregating $117,000.
You mean they wouldn't take that half-time person we were going to give legislative revenue out of the legislative budget and give us that in the process?
Those are beyond my pay grade.
Oh, okay.
Something I learned from your vice chair.
And it's the dash what amendment?
This would be the dash one, dash A4, actually. So dash three people A4. Have hit it before us.
Okay. We're going to close the public hearing and open the work session on House Bill 2530. And I would first off entertain a motion to move the... We don't have it. What are they going to
do? Let's do it anyway.
Yeah, we thought we did.
Oh.
We close the work session and we post the work session.
We will do precisely that. At this point, we will close the work session and post it for tomorrow.
Tomorrow or Monday.
Well, we'll post it for tomorrow and see what happens
tomorrow.
We will
post it for tomorrow.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Before Senator Morse gets away, you know, Senator Morse is a member of the full Ways and Means, and he's the author of those two bills, and if he would prefer to carry them himself, I would certainly defer to him.
That would be fine. If he would like to do so, I would certainly like to respect that.
Very flexible, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Whatever's the pleasure of the committee. And I appreciate that offer.
Senator Morse will carry the two-time bill. Yeah. And thank you, Senator, for making that comment for me. We will post this for tomorrow. If we don't have any action to take on tomorrow, we will repost it for Monday and see where the world is going at that particular time. And with that, we're adjourned.